Good morning, everybody. What a privilege to be here today, not just because it's church and it's Sabbath, but to witness a baptism. I'm like Yoshi, I get so excited every time. And as you mentioned, I'm a director at the union office, so I try to keep Bible studies going as I do that, but there's nothing like local church ministry, and that sort of stuff is just why you do what you do. It's so awesome. So congratulations to the family and Emma this morning. It's my privilege to share with you this morning. Let me just share a little bit about me and my role, because the reality is most people go, well, what's the union office and what is the Director of Personal Ministry, Sabbath School and Stewardship all about anyway? So give me a few seconds and I'll share a bit on that and then we'll get started. So basically my role at the union office in Ringwood is to oversee the directors of the 9 conferences across Australia for our directors of personal ministries and Sabbath school, which are pretty self-explanatory. Personal ministries is like personal evangelism. Our Sabbath school is something that I'm sure you were all in this morning, studying the word and fellowshipping together. But stewardship is the thing that most people go, what's that? What's that all about? And that's a little bit that I want to share with you on this morning. Previous to this role, I was working in Sydney. My husband and I are both pastors. We're working up there for 8 years. As pastoring up there, sometimes together, sometimes separately, which made for really interesting Sabbaths. But yeah, we had a lot of fun, but it's really great to be back in Melbourne, which is actually my hometown. I grew up in the Yarra Valley up in Warburton and headed up to college after I graduated high school, so it's really nice to be back. I've also got an 18-month-old daughter who couldn't be with us this morning because my husband's preaching and I'm preaching, so it gets a bit challenging on these type of days. So it's really great to be here. Just bow your heads with me. Let's pray as we open up the word this morning. Dear Heavenly Father, we just want to thank you again that we could witness such an awesome testimony of the way the Holy Spirit is working this morning in the life of Emma. I just pray that as we open up the word that you'll lead and guide, that you'll prepare our hearts, that it's not my words, but rather you'll speak something that will have an impact locally in the heart of each person here this morning as you speak to us in Jesus' name. Amen. Yeah, so as I mentioned, I've got an 18-month-old daughter, but as you can probably tell, I'm also expecting another child. I don't know what else you say, baby, very soon. And with your first child, there's always so much anticipation and excitement, but then there's always the second child who tends to, as they say, there's always, you're busy, so there's less anticipation, there's no less excitement, but you're just too busy to even think about it. I'm the third child, so I come from a whole other set of criteria when it comes to anticipating a baby. But for our first time around, I just remember, you know, with a pregnancy, each week you're looking, oh, what's going to happen next? What does it look like? How big is it? It's the size of this. It's the size of that. Whereas this time, my obstetrician said to me, have you gone for that, that blood test that you need to get? I'm like, oh, no, I was meant to do a blood test. And with the first pregnancy, there's so much anticipation. You go, I've got this whole list of things that I need to get ready for the baby. You know, I've got the cot, and I've got the car seat, and I've got all this stuff, and your hospital bag is packed from like 30 weeks in anticipation, because you can never be too ready, you can never be too prepared. Whereas this time around, I said to my mum the other day, oh, I really need to start getting out some of Georgia, my daughter's old clothes, to go through, so that at least we've got something to put the baby in once it's born. There's just a different kind of readiness, I suppose. And there's also the challenge of when the second child comes along, because you're so busy with an existing child or work or that sort of thing, you sort of go, how am I going to relate to this child? How am I going to show how much I love it? And is it going to feel the same or is it going to feel different? I remember the first time around, every little niggle, every little kick or lack of kicks or any sort of thing that caused concern, I'd be straight to my phone and I'd be Googling straight away. is it normal for this? Is it normal for this in pregnancy? Whereas this time around, because we've been so busy moving interstate and with work and with an 18-month-old that keeps you very busy as well, haven't even had time to think about these sort of things or to worry or to be concerned because, you know, it just sort of happens. That's the beauty of how God created us. You know, it's all just happening in there and I can just keep going about my business. But I had an appointment this week with my obstetrician. And every week it's kind of invasive. They like you to, depends who you're seeing, but they like to weigh you and they like to measure you and they like to ultrasound you and put all these things on you and check everything. And so each week you go in and they do all the measurements and they do all the things, but this week my obstetrician was a little concerned. And everything had normally had been progressing so normal so far, and I hadn't even been thinking about it, that when she goes, oh, we might just send you for a scan, I started to remember those feelings come back, you know, those protective feelings that you have going, oh, is everything okay? Is everything all right? Because they like to do a measurement, and I was just measuring a bit small for how many weeks that I am, so they asked me to go and do a growth scan. And I remember last time having a similar experience with Georgia, and those feelings that come back are so familiar. Have you ever had to be 100% responsible for someone else's well-being? Maybe if you're a kid or a young person here, it's a pet. You're literally 100% responsible for someone else's well-being. I used to have a pet turtle, and that may not seem like a lot of responsibility, but it really was. Have you ever been asked to look after someone else's pet or child, and you feel a burden of responsibility? And so if anything is to go wrong, you feel those same sort of feelings of anxiety, those same sort of feelings of stress, of going, oh, what am I going to do? How am I going to look after this? And I remember this happening the first time around with Georgia as well, and my husband and I driving home from our appointment, and we just had this huge realization that all of a sudden we're going to have to worry about something for the rest of our lives. That even though it's inside now, this baby and my previous baby, they're going to cause us concern and worry and responsibility for the rest of our lives. And I was talking to my mum about it later, and she goes, Lindell, you're 31 and I still feel those levels of responsibility. And I thought, wow, God, by giving us the power to have children and by giving us these responsibilities, he's trusted us with life. Why would he do that? And I stepped back a minute and I thought to myself, you know what, it's not just this that he's trusted us with. There is so much more. Everything on this earth God has entrusted us with and given us responsibility for. What a great responsibility. Why would he do that? And this, in essence, is what I want to talk about when I say the word stewardship. It's this trust and this sense of responsibility. And this is what I want to sort of illustrate this morning, because most people I come across to me go, I don't really know what that means. Is that tithes? Is that offerings? What is that? So let me give you a scenario. You go to a fancy hotel, and as you walk in, you've got your bags with you. And it's so fancy, it's one of the fanciest hotels, that someone comes up to you and takes them directly off you and says, let me help you with that, Mrs. Peterson. And you give your bags to this person who we call a steward, right? And they take them to your room, but those bags do not belong to the steward. Well, I hope not anyway, otherwise he's going to lose his job if he decides that they're going to belong to him. And he takes them up to your room while you go and check in and do whatever you need to do. What you're doing is you're entrusting your bags to that person for safekeeping for a short period of time. That is the barest bones definition of stewardship. And so the foundational principle when we look at it from a Christian perspective, from our perspective, is that God is creator, correct? He created this earth. And he has entrusted everything in it to us for a short period of time. He trusts us to care for it. He trusts us to look after it. The earth and everything in it, our bodies, everything that we have, our minds, God has created us with, we're to look after it for a while. Sounds pretty wild, doesn't it? Sounds kind of crazy. You mean everything I have comes from God? How, like, it's pretty far out. But it's true. If we open up the Bible, we go to Psalms. In the Psalms, David writes a lot about this sort of stuff. And in Psalm 139, verse 13, David says, "You, God, you're the one who knit me together in my mother's womb." David says, "God, you're the one that put me there." And then later, earlier in Psalms 24, he says, "The earth is the Lord's and everything in it, the world and all people belong to him." Everything in it belongs to God. And why? Because Psalms tells us he laid the earth's foundation on the seas and built it on the ocean depths. So because God created everything, he has ownership of all. And think about it. When he put Adam and Eve, if we go back to the very beginning of the Bible in creation, he put Adam and Eve in the garden thousands of years ago, and he told them, take care of it. He didn't say, here, this is yours. It now belongs to you. Here's the papers, signed, sealed, delivered. Here's the title deed. He said, no, he called them to be caretakers, or another word we use is stewards. But you might say to me, well, things are different now, though. We don't live in the Garden of Eden. We don't just walk over to a tree and pluck a delicious piece of fruit and eat it and are sustained that way. We don't do that sort of thing. We have houses, we have jobs, I have an income, you know, I provide for myself. I work hard for my money and the stuff that I have. Well, the Bible has an answer for that as well. Maybe different now, but Deuteronomy, as we jump down from Genesis, Deuteronomy tells us in chapter 8, verse 18, remember the Lord your God, for he is the one who gives you the ability to produce wealth. See, the Bible has an answer for everything. He's the one who gives you the ability to produce that wealth. So yeah, it might be your job, but where did you think you came from and your giftedness and your skills? And see, God is reminding the Israelites here about when he fed them manna and rescued them from Egypt. This is the context of this passage, and when he walked them through the Red Sea. And in the previous verse, he says to them, I did all this so that you would never say to yourself, I have achieved this wealth with my own strength and energy. Can you imagine? God saying, I led you out of Egypt. I gave you manna. I did all this stuff for you so that you would, I gave you the ability to produce wealth so that you couldn't say, I've achieved all this from my own strength. God saying, I want you to realize that it actually all comes from me. Yet it's so easy to think like that sometimes. We get caught up week in, week out. It's like, I've got to do the 9 to 5. I've got to do this. I've got to do that. I've got responsibilities. And it's all on my shoulders. But God is saying, actually, I've given you those abilities to achieve with my strength and energy. And there's a story that I read recently. It was about a woman, and it happened in the US. And I think once I finish the story, you'll go, only in the US can this happen. Mostly because only in the US can you carry a gun around in your purse. So there's a story of a woman. She finished her grocery shopping and she returned to her car only to find that there were 4 men inside her car. And so she just sort of panicked and she dropped her shopping bags and she drew a handgun from her purse. And with a forceful voice as she could muster, she said, I have a gun and I know how to use it. Get out of my car now. Those men did not wait for a second invitation. They jumped out of the car and they ran like crazy, as you would. I don't know who's going to sit there and be like, no. The woman, understandably shaken, quickly loads her shopping bags into the car and she just wants to get out of there. And so she jumps in as fast as she could and she gets the keys out and she's, you know, visibly shaking, just realizing, wow, I can't believe I just did this, and goes to put her keys in the ignition and only to find that it doesn't turn. You may have heard this story before. It doesn't turn. And then it hit her. Wait a minute. My fuzzy dice aren't up there. My other, I don't know what else you have in your car. And she realizes that this isn't actually her car. And she looks around, and indeed her car is parked just 4 or 5 spaces away. And she's thinking, oh, my goodness. Absolute facepalm moment. And she got out and looks around to see if the men were nearby, realizing that they'd just taken off. She just sheepishly kind of walks over to her own car and promptly drives herself to the police station to turn herself in. So the desk sergeant is sitting there, and after hearing her story, she's visibly upset. He nearly falls off his chair laughing because just previously to that, he points to the other end of the counter, and lo and behold, there are the 4 men reporting that they've been carjacked by this little old lady. carrying a large handgun. Thankfully, no charges were filed and it was all sorted out. But it's easy to assume that what we have is ours. It looks like ours. We've worked for it. It's decorated with our stuff. It has our flavour and our taste. But often we take for granted what we actually have. And it's easy to do that in a country like Australia as well, because we have everything available at our fingertips. I can easily say I worked hard for the money that I received, for the house that I've built, for the family that I have, for the great life that I've got for myself. I worked hard to, maybe I could say, not right now, I can't. I worked hard to look this good and healthy. Right now I'm not feeling that great. If we focus on health or on our bodies, or I've worked hard to get my university degree. If things come easy to us, we're quick to forget where all things come. C.S. Lewis writes it this way, and I love the way he puts it, but I'm going to edit it slightly to bring it into 2019. He says, one of the dangers of having a lot of time, talents, or treasure, these are sort of the things that we can steward, our time, our talents, or our treasure, is that you may be quite satisfied with the kind of happiness that these treasures can give, and so you fail to realize your need for God. And this is where I add my edit. See, if everything seems to come simply by tapping your card or your phone or whatever method you use, I know, but I don't even carry cash anymore, you may forget that you are at every moment actually totally dependent on God. Have you ever thought about that? Would you agree that you are every moment totally dependent on God? But I don't want to dwell here, because it is not about money. People think stewardship is tithes and offerings and all that sort of stuff, but it's really not. That is one very small facet. It's not about our work that we're told to manage. If you look throughout the Bible, there's actually far more examples of where God says, I've entrusted you with something important, and I want you to use it for me. So I want to give three examples this morning. And I hope this encourages you, Emma, this morning as well, because baptism is the start of a journey where you recognize that God is the Lord of your life, and that everything you have is an opportunity to serve him. So let's take one character, for example, Esther. Beautiful young woman. What did she have to steward? She was in captivity. Well, she had nothing. She was an orphan, I should say, not captivity. But she was given by God power, position, and I would argue beauty that got her into that place. And what did she do with it? She saved a nation. Her beauty could have been used to bring herself praise and honor, but God had a purpose for it. She could have been quite content to live the rest of her days as a queen, you know, enjoying it in the court of the king, but she used what she'd been given by God for that famous verse we know, perhaps this is the moment for which you've been created, Mordecai says to her. Perhaps this is why. This is what you've got to steward. Well, someone told the story, the example of Moses this morning. Her favorite Bible character was Moses stewarding his God-given physical attributes to save a nation. We say, well, what sort of physical attributes did Moses have? Well, if you look at the story of Moses, remember there's an altercation way back in Egypt when he sees the injustice of the Egyptian slaves treating the Egyptian slave drivers treating the Israelite slaves poorly. And what does he do? He physically attacks one of them. So we can tell that he's a physically strong guy. And we can also tell that Moses sees injustice and he's not afraid to speak up against it and to stand out against it. The problem is he's using those character traits and that strength in a really negative way, because he ends up killing this guy. But then if we jump down after he's had a transformative experience with God, we see what his real character is like. And he comes out into the desert and he sees these women at the well being attacked by guys come in from the desert and they want water and they attack it. And he goes in and he sees injustice and he stands up for these women and he protects them. So instead of using his physical strength like he did previously to hurt someone, he uses it to protect. The difference between the force he uses in each case is vastly different. same sense of injustice, same sense of passion for the vulnerable, and same loyalty to his people, and same leadership qualities, but they're just used in completely different ways. One brings no one glory, and one brings God glory. God then meets Moses in the burning bush and says, actually, I gave you these character traits. I gave you this sense of injustice, this physical strength, this sense of right and wrong and leadership, because I have another purpose for you, and that's to set your people free. And God promises him, I'll help you speak. I'll give you the words to say. And he challenges him, what's in your hand? What have I given you that you can use? And lastly, a classic example is Joseph. And I love the example of Joseph because even though he may not have started out well, I mean, Joseph had a shocking life. He had a shocking upbringing. You know, I mean, he was loved by his father, but his brothers, could you imagine? His brothers were so jealous of him that they rough him up and sell him to slave traders because they want to get rid of him. And then when he gets to Egypt, he gets into this really great position as a slave in Potiphar's house, and then his Potiphar's wife takes advantage of him and he ends up in jail because of a false accusation that she makes. And it's only after that he rises up and becomes the governor of Egypt. But think, you know, you can sit and be Joseph and think, God, why has my life come out this way? What on earth have you given me that I can use for you? It's like a life full of pain and struggle and abandonment. But actually, that was what made Joseph who he was. He was intelligent. He was relentless. He was resilient. He had optimism. And God uses that situation that when he becomes governor of Egypt, he's got a huge amount of compassion for people. So he stewarded this life of pain and rejection and challenges. He stewarded it and used it for God's glory in the end. And when his brothers come all the way during the famine and want to get some food, he had an option. He could have said, no, I don't think so. But no, he recognized that God had brought him to this position that he was in, and he was going to use it to bring God glory. I love the verse in Genesis around the Joseph story that says, you intended to harm me, but God intended it for good. So even in a life of pain and challenges, we can still use what God has given us for good. Joseph could have used his challenging life as a reason for him to enact revenge on his brothers, but in spite of that, he chose to be good and he chose to be generous. It's all about trusting. Trusting that God is in control no matter what our circumstance or situation. Trusting God whether we're in the prison in Joseph's case or in the pit in Joseph's case or in the palace. When life is good and when life is bad, it's trusting. God is saying, hey, this life that you've been given, those gifts, your particular characteristics, your particular personality, every way that I formed you in the womb, you can use to bring glory for me. The parts of you that you love, the parts of you that you may not like, I created you for a purpose. And that is a gift that we can steward for God. And it may not always feel like a gift, though, but he's entrusted us so we can use them for his glory. So what is it that you've been entrusted with? What is it that is in your hand like Moses had? Is it your life? Is it your upbringing? Is it your personality? Is it your talents? Is it something that you can do that no one else can? What has God given you to work with? And I want you to think of it like this as I finish up. Think of it like a card game or a board game. I'm sure many of you enjoy playing a board game. Has anyone here played Monopoly ever? Yeah, okay. So we agree. Monopoly is one of those universal games that everyone really loves. But did you know that Monopoly is actually the most violent game in the world? Has anyone played Monopoly with their family members? It gets ruthless. Again, these stories are coming out of the US. There was a story in the news about a grandmother who was playing Monopoly, this is all Monopoly-related violence, and got so upset by what was happening in the game that she broke the wine bottle next to her and stabbed her partner. They had to call the police. Yeah, Monopoly. It's dangerous. Two friends were playing Monopoly one afternoon, and one was the bank, and they realised that the bank was, you know how the bank has the discretion to take a few extra bank fees whenever they want to, and that was happening. So the friend pulled out his compound bow, which apparently is not just like a bow and arrow, but like it's got a trigger. Yeah, I don't know much about this stuff. I'm just reading from the internet. One of them ended up in jail as a result of that Monopoly. And then there were senior citizens playing in a senior citizen centre, and I probably don't really need to go into much detail, but someone ended up being shot in the back of the head. So people get very upset over something that's a game, okay? People can get very upset over a game, but let's think about it. Monopoly, yes, there's some strategy involved in Monopoly, but really it's chance. I mean, you've just got to, everyone gets the same amount of money, but you roll a dice. It is a chance game. There should be no reason why anyone is getting this upset. And there was a famous author that wrote about this, and his name is just out of my mind for the minute, but he says, at the end of the game, all the cards and pieces and money go back in the box anyway. You literally just finish it up and that's it, and pack it away. Why does it make people so upset? And I would argue that it's similar with our lives. We are dealt a hand, or we receive what we get given. We're entrusted with a life that changes or moves as we make decisions and actions. Yeah, it's not the roll of a dice. We make choices and we have consequences. But then at the end of the day, when life is over, we go, well, I'm not left with anything anyway. But, see, this is where with Christianity it's different. Unlike a card game or a game of Monopoly or a roll of the dice, there is a divine purpose to our lives. And the choices that we make will move our life in different directions. But ultimately, if we trust and believe that God is leading and guiding us, then it's more than just chance. It's more than just randomness. We might sit there and say, well, I want her cards, or the property that she's got, or they got Mayfair and this is unfair. They're heaps better than mine, but God promises in the Bible that he actually knew us before we were even formed in the womb, that he had a plan for how we could use what he's given us to serve him, and it's up to us to faithfully play that, to look at what we have and ask ourselves, how can I use this to bring God glory? Because it's more than just chance, it's divine. And this is stewardship. So I want to challenge you this morning, just to start very simply and ask God. Ask God through prayer, what is it that you've given me, God, that I can use for you? What do you have? Is it your skills, personality trait? Do you have free time that you can use to serve God? Do you have a network of people that you know? Or maybe for our young people, you've got a following on social media. You have an opportunity to influence for God. Maybe you've got a big house with a nice big table where you can have people over. Maybe you cook really great pancakes and you can go cook pancakes for teens or youth. Maybe you're a great listener and you can be there for someone who just needs to talk. People generally think that stewardship, oh, she's going to talk about money, she's going to talk about offerings and tithe. But you guys know all that. Money is the easy part of stewardship. What about the rest of your life? It's easy to pull out e-giving. It's easy to direct debit your tithe and all that sort of stuff. But what about the rest of your life? God gave us more than just what's in our wallet. He gave us our whole lives. What's harder to steward are the things that are less tangible. Is it influence? Is it leadership skill? Maybe it's pain in your life, and this is a tough one. Maybe like Joseph, you've had experiences that have made you who you are today, and that are still painful and that are still challenging. But maybe God says we can redeem that and we can use it to reach out to someone else for me. Whatever it is, I challenge you this morning to take time to pray and ask God, what can I do with what you've given me? What is it that I'm not seeing? What is it that I can return to you as an offering and that I can use to bring you glory? Today, it was really awesome that we witnessed this young girl say yes to Jesus publicly. And I hope it's an opportunity for all of us to say yes to Jesus once again privately, even if we've done it publicly a long time ago. And so this morning, I just want to encourage you to seek God and say yes to him again and ask, what is it, God, that I can use for your glory? What is the gap that I'm missing? What can I give again to you? That's my challenge for you this morning.